Friday was a big day of news from outer space. A meteorite exploded over Russia, and asteroid DA14 swept incredibly close to Earth. And more news in the coming week. Tomorrow is the anniversary of the discovery of the planet Pluto, February 18, 1930. What was the ninth in our solar system? I spoke with Robert Beauford, PhD student in space and planetary sciences at the University of Arkansas, about how and why Pluto was downgraded from a planet to a dwarf planet.
When we divided up the solar system, I say we, hundreds of years ago, when we divided up the solar system into our current way of naming things, and we only saw a few things from the ground, these few bright stars that migrated across the sky, you know. And over time, we understood that the solar system was a far more complex place and very full of stuff. We now track, I don't know the current numbers, but a lot of near-Earth objects. And there's something like 500,000 at least significant objects that share the inner solar system orbits. At least 500,000 significant objects. I mean, multi-meter objects that share orbits with Earth and the inner solar system that are in that sort of near-Earth object zone. But there are literally millions of objects in the outer solar system out around and past Pluto. There are millions upon millions of objects in the solar system, some of which approach the size of Pluto, some of which exceed the size of Pluto. But as we understood that the solar system was a far more populated and far more complex place than our ancestors understood it to be, it became necessary to revise the way we talk about it and name things. It was either demote Pluto to a new class of object, a minor planet, or else start adding new planets on at a phenomenal rate as we discovered them.
Right, because we've discovered things that are much larger than Pluto that would constitute a planet.
Yeah, properly, Dawn, the Dawn mission looking at Vesta was examining a minor planet. I mean, the asteroid Vesta was a differentiated, large, rounded body, and that was a recent mission. That the Dawn mission was circling Vesta, which is an asteroid of, I don't want to say wrong, but I'm wanting to say it was something like 600 kilometers in diameter. It's a very large object. You know, so this is, by any standard, at least a small moon-sized object.
Yeah, that sounds large.
Yeah.
Well, what about, and this is silly, but, I learned my very eager mother just ate 9 pizzas, right? So, how do you remember the planets?
That's how
I learned in elementary school, how you learn the order of the planets. Well, what happens to the pizza?
Well,
I'm going to have to come up with a new saying, a new acronym or whatever.
Now the pizza is in very good and growing company with lots and lots of other minor planet objects. And we've moved beyond even the question of an increasingly populated solar system in which we live to the point where we're starting to name planet after planet around other stars.
So we are adding planets to our solar system.
We're not only adding planets to our solar system, but beyond almost the imagination of people in other generations, we're adding planets to our galaxy. We're starting to track and name planets that are near Earth size around other stars. So not only has our own solar system grown in population by millions of objects, we are actually starting to see and name planets in the thousands around other stars that are nearby. So this is an extremely exciting time in solar system history and in planetary science history.
Do you? I know that there have been, a lot of cuts to like the to NASA, and you say it's an exciting time, but is there a decrease in interest in these things? And what do you?
That's an interesting question. I haven't given it much consideration. I would like to see more funding go to space science. When you look at the hard numbers, there are few things that we have ever done with tax money that have given more in tangible, measurable terms to society than our investment in space science. I mean, in economic terms as well as in benefit to the society on every front, on the whole, than our investment in NASA and our investment in space science. I don't know where the future is in that. I think that perhaps with moving past the moment when we were landing on the moon and an increasingly exciting media environment in which we're constantly stimulated by human experiences on every front, perhaps the genuine excitement of the phenomenal human accomplishment of the exploration of space is lost in the chatter of the everyday excitement of what's happening in the world.
But well, a very large, I mean, you know, like I have heard about the, you know, in 3 days, I have heard about that, but there are a lot of other discoveries that just, forgive me, but, for, you know, that my, just miss my radar.
The Mars Curiosity rover is a good example. That rover is one of the foremost human achievements of history.
It was all over the news.
Yes. And, but, you know, if you ask people what's happening with that today,
exactly.
You know, most of them have forgotten that it happened. And yet that thing is wandering around the surface of Mars with a science package on it that's the equivalent of what most universities can do in their geological program on site.
Yeah.
So this is a fundamentally great human achievement. It's a moment in human history.
But it was only exciting to the masses for a little while.
Yeah, it's just a flash in the pan of the interest cycle that people have. So, you know, I don't think that the interest or the support for the space program is waning. I think that it gets lost in the chatter.
Mm-hmm.
We're achieving more now on less money than was ever possible before, possibly because the technology has gotten so much better. We can do so much more with so much less. But that's not an excuse for underfunding the program. I mean, the program is cut again and again and again, and it's a loss to humanity. It's not just a loss to our country because it produces tangible and economic benefits, but it's a loss to humanity in that the work we do now provides the perspective from which future generations will, you know, look out to explore the universe in their own right.
Well, this is now my third story I've done on space-related things in my 2 years here. So
really appreciate that.
That's kind of good, you know.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to y'all.
Yep. Robert Beauford is a doctoral student for space and planetary sciences at the University of Arkansas. His area of expertise is astrogeology. He made an interesting discovery concerning a meteorite that exploded over California last April. We also discuss that experience. Look forward to that conversation in the weeks to come on Daily Ozarks at Large. But with the excitement of Friday's meteorite explosion over Russia, here's a preview.
Well, this thing was the size of a Volkswagen when it came into the atmosphere.
Right.
It's several tons, you know, and passing through 100 kilometers of atmosphere, and particularly that lower 30 kilometers where it starts to get dense. I mean, the thing basically burned into tiny little pieces. We've only recovered, I think, to date about a kilo of it total, about 2.2 pounds. That's a very rough estimate. I haven't seen the current numbers. But because it's a really special meteorite, it is the single most accurate time capsule that we have of the formative moments of the solar system, this particular meteorite class. I mean, the solar system history in very brief is 4.56 billion years ago, there was a cloud of hot dust and gas that collapsed, and, you know, 99%+ of that is in the sun, and the remainder is in the planets, minus a few tiny scraps.
That's Robert Beauford, PhD student in space and planetary sciences at the U of A. He came to the station this week to discuss his discovery about a historic meteorite that exploded over California last April. Look for that discussion in the weeks to come on a daily edition of Ozarks at Large.